Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Lots of things to talk about. If you want to talk about any of the various presidential candidates, feel free. We're going to do that probably a little later on. And certainly welcome if you want to talk about the joke that is Donald Trump. Feel free to go ahead. He certainly is a joke. But I have a more serious topic. It's one that I started yesterday. It's one that I'm going to talk about with Leslie later on in the next hour. And really the bigger and more interesting story around the nation. By now, all of you know that a woman by the name of Rachel Dolezal basically is a white woman who tells the nation that she identifies as black. And she has colored her skin, changed her hair, and done, by all accounts, some good things as the head of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington, until she was recently exposed. There was a very well-written article on the front page of the New York Times today that explains her past, her history. As you can imagine, there is a bit of trouble in that history. Certainly her path is not one that is commonly taken. To me, the broader question, though, goes way beyond Rachel Dolezal. I think most of us would agree that what she did was wrong, if only because she lied about who she is and where she comes from. And in lying, she did not win any friends, no matter what she identifies as. But the larger question is more interesting. The question of African-American identity and how it is distinguished from, let's say, Jewish American identity or gay American identity or Asian American identity, Latino identity, Southern identity, so forth and so on. Because I welcome ethnicities, peoples that welcome others. What is a people? A people to me is a group of persons that collectively practice certain traditions, have certain language, have certain ways they act and interact among each other, and it is the various peoples of the United States that indeed make this country great, including among them African American people, but also including among them Italian American people or English American or Catholics or WASPs or Muslims or gay people or transgendered people or people with disabilities or people who are left-handed. There's all kinds of ways to categorize peoples. And some of them are by choice and some are not. And what's fascinating about race is that while it is a physical characteristic, it is actually a social construct. See, you could divide cultures, peoples, into those that you can join and those that you can't. You can join Southern culture. Now, they may look askance upon you coming here to Tennessee from Connecticut, and it may take you some years to join the culture, to learn the lingo, to know your way around the South, to speak like a Southerner, to act like a Southerner. But, hey, you know, George Bush, moving from Connecticut to Texas, George W. Bush, I think most people would say, despite his well-heeled Connecticut upbringing, he became a Texan. You can join Southern culture. You can join Northern culture, Midwestern culture, California culture. There is definitely a New England culture. You can join them all. You can leave them all. And as long as you don't do so fraudulently, no one's going to complain. Now, if you claim to be born in the South and you're not born in the South, people are going to look at you askance. Not because it's wrong to be born outside the region that you claim as your home and that you identify with, but because people will see you as a liar. I mean, we all know that foreign-born Americans are a strong and vibrant part of the American cultural landscape. We've always had a strong percentage of our population as immigrants, more so than virtually any other country on earth, because we are a nation of immigrants, or people come from all over. And yet, if you meet someone from Mali or Venezuela or Japan or France or wherever, and they say they're American, and you ask them, where were you born, and they lie, and they say the United States, well, then they're a liar. It's not wrong to be born in Mali, France, Venezuela, or Japan, and be a strong American, and no one should discriminate against someone on the basis of their place of birth. It's one of the reasons, by the way, why I don't like that old clause in the Constitution that says that you have to be a, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote, to run for president. I think it's discriminatory. I think any citizen should be able to run for president. And if people don't want to vote for someone because they don't think they're American enough, having been born in a foreign country, well, that's up to the American people to decide. So I don't think there's any conflict between saying, hey, I'm American, and saying I was born in another country. But if you claim to be born somewhere other than where you were born, yeah, that's a lie. And that's true not just in America and outside of the United States, but also within various regions. Similarly, and I am Jewish, you can become Jewish. You can become Christian. You can become Muslim. You can become atheist. You can join or leave any religion. Sometimes it's more easy than others. It's actually not particularly easy to become Jewish. The traditional Jewish law requires you to study for a year and then pass a test where you have a rabbinical court and three rabbis ask you tough questions. Just like it's not easy to become a citizen of the United States, it's not easy to become a member of the Jewish religion. However, it is possible. It is possible for anyone, regardless of your race or former religion or gender or sexual orientation or anything else. Anyone can become Jewish. Sammy Davis Jr. famously was an early African-American who converted to Judaism, and there are many others. And once you become Jewish, you should be fully accepted in the Jewish religion. Some would argue that converts are not fully accepted, and to the extent they aren't, I condemn that, just as I condemn Americans who don't fully accept Americans, or even, for that matter, Southerners who don't fully accept people from Connecticut into the South and are friendly toward them. And if I use a lot of examples of Jewish or Southern or gay, it's because, well, I'm all three. Now, being gay is a little bit different. That's something you are born with. You are born with your various sexual orientation. Now, if you're bisexual, and we talked about this a couple days ago, then you can choose the object of your affection more readily than if you're gay or straight or anywhere along the scale. And there's certainly gay people, lesbian people who lived a straight lifestyle until they felt courageous enough to come out in the face of prejudice. But again, you can join this community. And you can join the gay community as a straight ally. No question about it. I'm very, very proud of my first cousin, who at the age of 17 formed the second gay-straight alliance in her Nashville high school. Very proud of her. Now, she's straight, but she showed early on her empathy for others who were different and her willingness to reach out to those that are different. And I'm very proud of her for doing that. Just as I'm proud of interfaith organizations, just as I'm proud of people who welcome immigrants into their homes. Now, all of this background is obviously a prelude to our discussing Rachel Dolezal. Because I, for one, have done a tremendous amount of work in and around and within the African-American community. I've been to black churches since I was a kid. I can't tell you how many times I've been inside a black church. It's in the dozens for sure. And I'm not even Christian. One of my earliest memories is being in a swimming pool at age 8 and learning that the country club that someone at my school had invited me to and had invited me to go in the pool in, and I love to swim, so that was, I thought, an easy choice for me. But until I learned the country club didn't accept blacks, or Jews for that matter, as members. I learned that at age 8. And I said, what am I doing here? And he said, well, you know, they don't know you're Jewish. And I said, what would happen if a black kid jumped in? And my school friend said, I'm sure everyone would get out. Get out! Get out of the pool! So I told him I wanted to get out and I wanted to go home, and I was feeling very uncomfortable there. That was one of my earliest protests. I think I've talked about it before. So, and then it just goes on and on. I mean, in grammar school and in high school, I did one of my great reports was on the integration of Nashville schools to understand that. I always studied Nashville civil rights. My aunt helped register black people in Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964, which was a very dangerous time, as anyone knows who's seen the movie Mississippi Burning. In law school, I led a protest against bigotry. After graduating, I was hired by Congressional Black Caucus to challenge Bush v. Gore. My radio station in Washington, D.C., WPFW, where I do a show every Friday, is largely managed, I think exclusively. I'm not sure. I haven't really done the count. But certainly, if not all, most all of the management is African-American. Most of the hosts are African-American. I was the sole white guy on Black Talk Radio on XM The Power a few years back. 24/7, there were black folk and me talking about race. I've done seminars at University of District of Columbia, a historically black college that featured what has the Bush administration done for black people. So I'm very comfortable in and around African Americans. I am, however, not African American. I do remember a discussion at law school with some black students who told me I couldn't possibly understand the African American experience. Now, to that I disagree. I hadn't lived the African American experience, but that doesn't mean I couldn't understand. I believe we are all human. We can understand each other. That's what great literature is about. I would never say to someone who's not Jewish, you can't possibly understand the Jewish experience. I would never tell a straight person, you can't possibly understand what it's like to be gay. That, to me, is an insult to the human capability for empathy. If a straight person wants to know what it's like to be gay, let me talk about my experience, and hopefully you will understand from my experience. And of course, my experience isn't unique. There are many gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender people who have very, very different experiences from me. I didn't really understand the transgender experience until I talked at length with people who are transgender. So it's true, if you haven't talked with someone of another background, it's hard to understand their experience. But I don't believe it's impossible. All of this is to say that to the extent that Rachel Dolezal, if she just told the truth, that she was born white, but very much identified and empathized with the black community and wanted to help the black community and wanted to help and considered it her own, I think she would have been accepted with open arms in the black community, in the African-American community, even if that was not her original heritage. It was only the fact that she misrepresented who she was that is causing all this uproar. Anyway, that's my take on it. I'm curious to hear yours. Give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about, well, race and the social construct. But to me, it's a larger issue than race. It's an issue of really any culture, any people, any ethnicity. And I support being able to join cultures and ethnicities, but to do so on a real basis, based on who you are and where you come from. And, you know, anyone can become French. You learn the language, you learn the culture, you join France, you become a citizen, you learn the language. And now people may still say, well, you weren't born French. And they have a right to say that because you weren't. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to join. When I was at Harvard, there was a group of, it was called Kaumba Singers. And they sang African melodies. It was beautiful a cappella singing. And one of my close friends was in it. I got to watch her all the time. And she's African American. But in the group, you couldn't help but notice that among the 80 or 90% black singers, there were 10 to 20% white ones. Or Latino or Asian, non-black singers. And they sang beautifully and they sang with the others. And I think the African-Americans appreciated they were there. And I think the non-black kids appreciated being included in a proud, honorable, and beautiful sounding tradition. Now, they wouldn't call themselves black. But at the same time, the fact that they could identify with and be part of black culture was indeed praised by everyone. This was the path that Rachel Dolezal should have taken. This is Mark Levine. Feel free to give me a call now. A lot of times I get a lot of calls at the end, and then I can't get to everyone. If you call any time before 10 minutes to the end of the hour, I will make sure that you get on the air. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to James in North Carolina on line one. Hey, James, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is the whole thing. I thought about this issue very deeply after I heard about this young lady, you know, over being the head of, you know, a major black organization. Well, actually, organization presenting herself as black.
Right.
And the question is, with me, is what is race, period? You know, and the thing is, it's a social construct, and I agree with you, and that's what we have come to believe in this country, the United States. And the whole thing about it, race actually, from what I understand, it mostly started in the United States.
Right, and listen, you know, race was largely
people as a race.
Yeah, and largely imposed on the outside. It is a complete social construct to choose certain genetic features to matter. But I would note that there are other social constructs. Again, the example of being French. That's a complete social construct that this group of people are French or not French. So I don't mind that it's a social construct as long as we recognize what it is and simply recognize it as having become relevant culturally, relevant politically, relevant because there is an African American people that has a very distinct culture that is part of the wonderful diversity that is the United States. And so by saying social construct, I don't mean to suggest it's not real. Social constructs are real. They have real impacts on real lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. But in this country, race has a different issue or a different history. Race was actually developed during, post-Reconstruction so that they could actually control the population.
No question about it, James. Hold on, I just got to take a break just because we're on a hard break here, but stick around. Isaac, please stick around as well. We'll get back to James after the break. This was called the One Drop Rule.
When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, talking about race. Rachel Dolezal is the impetus, but it's a larger question. It's one about what race is, what it means, where it comes from. Can you join it? Can you leave it? And how does it affect, well, who we are? And how does it differ from other things, like other peoples or groups of people in America? If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. This is Mark Levine. I've got James in North Carolina. James, sorry for interrupting you. Please continue.
Yes, you know, race got started, it was established in this country during Reconstruction as far as the legal definition, you know, for race. And it was mostly implanted. I don't think people really realize this, but it was put there not just to keep black people in their place, but it was also put there to keep these groups of Europeans and African descendants from mixing, because the rule was, you know, that one drop blood made your offspring inferior legally.
Right.
Legally inferior.
That's right. And let's back up a bit, because I want people to understand. Reconstruction was right after slavery, when Jim Crow started being set up. Interestingly, slavery, and this may surprise some people, slavery was not legally, technically based on race. That's going to surprise a lot of people, because obviously the vast majority of the enslaved people were Africans, and the vast majority of the people doing the enslaving were not Africans. But it wasn't all. There were free blacks in the United States long before the Civil War. There were enslaved Native Americans, and there were even a few, very few, but it did happen, a few black slave owners, notably on the islands off of South Carolina. So as a legal matter, even though obviously it was infused with racism, obviously 99% of the time the owners were white and the slaves were black, it wasn't codified as race until, the caller's absolutely right, James is right, until after the Civil War, when the slaves were freed and Southern whites still wanted to put them down. So they had to find a way to do it, and it wasn't based on slavery anymore. It had to be based on this concept called race. And James is absolutely right, a drop of black blood and you were considered to be black, which meant that in the very famous case of Plessy versus Ferguson, a man who was 1/8 African-American, 7/8 white, they called him an octoroon, which it sounds as offensive as it is, meaning he was 1/8 black. He was removed from a streetcar, and that's how the whole separate but equal Plessy v. Ferguson doctrine got started, until it was overturned by Brown versus Board of Education. So, James, I just want to say that you're absolutely right, and I wanted to explain to people why it began in Reconstruction, because people are going to say, well, racism began long before then. Obviously it did, but I'm sort of explaining how legally it became part of the code. Go ahead.
Right. So, you know, and up through the years, it changed. You know, say like during 64, you know, when the Civil Rights Movement got started, you know, that concept of race legally was already established. So what the government did is it latched onto that definition of race, and it tried to use it in order to correct some of the past, you know, wrongs. And basically what it's saying is anybody that was the descendant of a slave or appeared to be a descendant of a slave would be protected under the law.
Right. So, although I have to tell you, James, personally, I find a real difference. And some actually opposed Obama for finding the difference between a descendant of a slave and a descendant of an African. Those are two different groups of people. President Obama is not
Absolutely.
A descendant of slaves. His wife, Michelle, is. He is not. He is a descendant of a white mother and an African father, and as such, does not share or did not share growing up some of the typical experiences that descendants of slaves do and did. And for that reason, some in the black community, you don't hear it so much anymore, but I remember when he first came on the political scene, there were those in the African-American community that said, well, you know, he's not really of our culture because he doesn't have that heritage.
Well, I'd argue, because in the United States, if you appear to be black, it's assumed that you are, by most other people, you're going to be assumed to be an American black person. In other words, a former descendant. And that doesn't even come into mind consciously. But, you know, what happens is anybody that's darker and doesn't look European and doesn't look Middle Eastern or, you know, Asian or whatever is assumed to be of slave descent. But I know Africans that are first generation here in this country, and they get offended if you call them African-American or black because, you know, they're Nigerian, they're Somali, they're from they understand what it is to be born in this country.
They're immigrants. In fact,
slave.
They have more in common with the immigrant experience than with the African American experience. And conversely, you look at someone like Tiger Woods, who's only a quarter black, and when he said he was Kablan Asian, of course he's a quarter black, I think a quarter Asian and half white, and truly reflecting his accurate multi-ethnic heritage. A lot of people mocked him as if he were some. I mean, he was telling the truth. It was other people, black and white, who used the one drop rule to categorize him, I thought, unfairly as a black man,
right,
when he clearly was a multiracial person.
Right. It's very unfair. But, you know, that's the whole thing about when you get when people, like I say, there's a lot of people in a lot of communities, say, European communities, that don't know the distinction between, I mean, because they go upon appearance, you know.
Right. That's right.
And you see now there's, if you look at the white race, okay, for instance, what's called the white race in this country, what you have is people that are dramatic. You have
a huge variety.
British. You have
absolutely.
People, but they're all considered Caucasian. They're all
right. Which is weird because people in the Caucasus, they actually look a lot more like me than Germans do, because I'm relatively dark-skinned. I'm of Middle Eastern heritage. I'm Jewish. And the Caucasus is a lot closer to the Middle East than it is to England. And so I always thought it was ironic. In fact, the Nazis talked about Aryan race, which is extremely ironic, that Aryan, the word Aryan comes from Iran. And they don't look very Persian. Yeah. They look a lot more Nordic than Persian. And it's just this weird, because the distinction between Arab and black, particularly in a place like Sudan, I mean, or Egypt, you know, where Anwar Sadat, was he black? Was he Arab? I mean, these are artificial distinctions. And go ahead.
Yes, there are artificial distinctions, but, you know, that is used in a lot of cases, that is used by people that, you know, have a quest for power, and they use that race division as a part, when they can, they use it to divide and conquer.
No question.
So, you know, we have people, you know, we have different groups of people that are just different culturally. But, you know, we're all human, but they're different culturally, and you pit one against the other by making that distinction. Matter of fact, that's why, you know, the United States has such a large population of African descendants is because that was used during slavery.
Of course.
You're right. There were other people that were used as slaves, but gosh, it was kind of easy for, say, an indentured servant to slip off, you know, during the times of slavery or whatever. And he could meld into the general population.
That's right. You could escape much more easily. So there's no question about it. And then there's the interesting question among black people of light skin versus dark skin, and blacks that could pass as white has long been an issue in the African-American community. And this issue of a white person passing as black, I think, precisely because it's exactly the opposite of what we expect, has really been, I mean, it's interesting. This was not a one-day story. This is something that, you know, the Today Show and the New York Times, the Washington Post, these are front page stories. Some woman in Spokane has her own issues. It's really very unique and specific to her. It wouldn't be interesting except for all the larger questions that it raises.
I'm just wondering, though, you know, she seems to be fairly sincere in the fact that she's saying that she identifies as black. Now, she, you know, the interviews that I've seen of her, she's never claimed or even tried to claim that she was of African American descent.
Well, that's today. That's today after she was caught. According to the New York Times, an article today, she identified a black man as her father that wasn't her father. She identified herself as black. So in the past, she has apparently misrepresented her background.
I'm black myself. Okay, in the black community, there is this. How should I say it? There is this tendency for people to claim people that are not their natural parents as mother or father. And, you know, and the thing is, she may have been being deceitful, but I know some of my black friends that they don't get along with their natural parents. And say maybe they went through some hard times, that this time maybe some older, mature person actually looked out for them. They call them mom and dad.
Yeah, I see that too. But in those cases, the vast majority of those cases, if you went up to that person and said, "Is that your biological father? They will tell you, no, this is a person who took me in, and I and he treated me like a son, and I treated him like a dad.
Right.
I mean,
but
so
did anybody ever ask this lady that question?
My impression is they did, but again, I certainly don't know her personally. I'm basing it on these press accounts. Clearly, it's an interesting question, if only because it raises all these other questions which we're bringing up. James, I want to thank you for calling in. I do want to get to another caller, but thank you for sharing your wisdom and keep calling in. All right. Thanks. All right, let's go to Isaac in New Mexico on line 5. He's been holding a while. Hey, Isaac, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
But I was saying, when you said earlier that people that they can empathize, I disagree with that. I think it's very difficult to empathize. She didn't grow up inside a community or when she was growing up and having to deal with all the same situations that other African American children dealt with. So she can try to sympathize and she can do everything she can to try to understand, but she's never going to fully understand. Even in my, because I'm Hispanic, but I'm very light skinned and I actually pass. But my siblings do not. And the way that they were raised and what happened to them growing up is far different from what happened to me when I was growing up. So saying, I mean, when you say you can empathize and you can understand, I don't think that that's true. Anyway,
let's unpack that a little bit. So obviously sympathize means to care about someone who's not like you. Empathize means, I think the best definition that I can think of for the word is to be able to put yourself in someone's shoes. To actually imagine yourself to be like that other person and to care about them in that respect. You have brothers and sisters who, as you point out, can't pass, look very Latino, and have undergone, no doubt, more prejudice than you've undergone. She had siblings, black African-American siblings, that her parents adopted. She also has a black husband and multiracial children. What you're really saying, Isaac, and I guess where we disagree, is that you cannot empathize with someone who's different from you unless you actually are that difference. And that's where I disagree. I can read literature. I can try to understand. I believe I can empathize with people who are not like me if I really work at it. I'm not saying it's easy, but are you really saying that you can't empathize with your brothers and sisters because you don't look as Latino as they do?
One of my sisters served in Afghanistan, and I cannot, I mean, as much as I talk to her and other people that served with her, I cannot fully understand what she went through there.
Can you 99% understand? Can you 95% understand?
The more you try, you can get close, but you can't fully understand it. It's like you in New York City. If you were in New York City and you're trying to catch a cab, you're going to be able to catch a cab, and you're not going to think twice about it. An African-American in New York City isn't going to be able to catch a cab. We had a friend in college who was going through his PhD program, and when he was going to actually present at a conference, we had to actually call and make the reservations for him in the hotel rooms because he couldn't get a reservation in a hotel room. I can sit there and I can think about it and I can be there with him while he's experiencing, but I can't fully understand needing to have somebody make a hotel room reservation for me while I'm going to present at a conference. That's something, it's so weird, it's hard for me to wrap my head around it, even though I had to make the phone call for him.
I hear what you're saying, but partly you and I are arguing semantics here, because I don't know that we truly disagree other than semantically. But my problem with that statement, which someone said to me in law school, you can never fully understand, is to me it implies almost a you shouldn't try. Or that only blacks can talk about race, or only Latinos can talk about racism against Latinos. And I think that part of the concern is that that's a conversation ender rather than a conversation beginner. In other words, I want to listen to black people talk about race, but I don't want to feel that only black people can talk about the black experience. Any more than only, and as a Jew, I don't think only Jewish people could talk about the Jewish experience. There are a number of non-Jews who I've sat down and talked to about everything from the Holocaust to what it's like to be a Jewish minority. And I just fear that that kind of statement is used to shut off interracial, interreligious communication when I think it's more necessary than ever.
I can understand that because I had friends that also taught communications classes, cultural communications, and when you go into a class and you start talking about privilege or something like that, a lot of people would get upset, the Caucasian students, because they felt that they were responsible for it and that they're the ones that did it, and saying, no, you aren't, we can't hold you accountable. I mean, it's not, it's your responsibility to understand that it's going on, but you didn't create the system,
right.
Although you can benefit from the system.
And I don't deny white privilege at all. I don't want anyone to think I deny white privilege.
No, but I get what you're saying there, that if it's gonna kill the conversation, then it needs to be approached in a different way, because the last thing we want to do is kill the conversation. And it's totally true that I'm a Latino, and a lot of people can speak to the problem, stuff like that, and they're allies, and it's great.
I also think, though, that there's enough difference among Americans that we can compare and contrast, that in some ways Latinos are treated like blacks in America. And in some ways, different ways, Jews are discriminated against, gay people are discriminated against, there's cultural discrimination. And it's almost interesting to compare. I mean, I certainly know prejudice from my past, and you know from yours, and someone else does from theirs. I guess my problem with it, you can never fully understand, and we got to take a break. We can keep talking after the break, is that I don't think humanity is that different, in the sense of unfair treatment, unfair prejudice occurs in virtually every country on earth, in almost virtually every culture on earth. And yes, the forms are different, and the way it takes its form, its ugly form, is different. But the idea that some group of people discriminates against another group of people is as old as humanity and as widespread as humanity. And I want to emphasize where we all can share a common experience as much as we also learn from the individual experiences. But stay with me, Isaac. I'm going to encourage others to call in as well. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine talking about Rachel Dolezal and race. Isaac, I'm going to give you a few last words, and I want to move on to another caller in my last couple minutes, but go ahead.
Okay, I guess when you did make me look at it kind of in a different way, maybe empathy is more along the lines of a spectrum, so you can get like 10% there and 90% there, but I do think somebody like George Bush is going to have a more difficult time trying to understand that, especially where he came from, and he's going to have a more difficult time than, let's say, his wife, who's experienced sexism. So
right.
Maybe it's not looking at it as 100% there. It's how close can you get,
okay,
and the closer you get, the better off.
And clearly, anyone who has undergone any kind of prejudice for any reason is more likely to understand someone else who's undergone prejudice, even if it's of a different type, whether race or gender or sexual orientation. Thanks for your call, Isaac. I appreciate it. Let me go to Labula in Texas on line one. You got the final word here.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my phone call, sir.
Sure.
I appreciate the show. My only concern, I'm African. I'm originally from Congo, Central Africa.
Yes.
And I kind of feel sorry for the lady in that sense that my concerns are, especially the parents. I mean, as a parent, I don't know if I would subject any of my child to such embarrassment, you know?
I thought about that, too. Apparently, according to the New York Times, she's been estranged from her parents for many, many years. It is a weird dynamic to have your parents call you out. Even if she is doing something wrong, it is a little strange and a little disconcerting. I agree with you.
Yeah, that was my two cents I wanted to put in, you know, before, because we tend to jump on the lady, you know, she's weirdo, she has deceived us. I sympathize with her to wanting to be a black person, I guess, but also
I hear you.
The ridicule that the parents put her through is just uncalled for. Thank you very much.
Fair point, Labola, a very fair point. Look, all she had to do was say, yeah, she was born white, but she empathizes and identifies with black people and wants to help in any way she can. I think she would have been embraced by the black community as well as good liberal white people. This is Mark Levine. Talk to you tomorrow.
And we're back. So is he. Mark Levine, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees, host of the first hour the hour before me, Monday through Friday. And Mark, you have a new title. Share with us. And do we have a drum roll? I wish we had one. I wish I had one. Maybe we can find one. But Mark, you have a new title as well. Congratulations. It is.
Well, my new title would be, I guess, a Democratic nominee for the House of Delegates in Virginia.
Congratulations. And you have no Republican opposing you, so this is pretty much going to be yours.
That's right. I'm not technically delegate-elect until November, but given that I'm the only person on the ballot, it's going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, though, Mark, and I hope nobody doesn't, I was just curious what you would get paid for that, and it was like, are you kidding me?
Well, I get paid the sum, substance, and massive annual salary of $17,640.
I know, I saw that. And I mean, that's probably equal to or less what, you know, starting out in broadcasting pays. You know that.
I'm getting pure poverty wages. But obviously, I'm not doing this for the money.
And most people who do this particular position or run for this particular area of office that you are as a delegate, that wouldn't be their full-time job, which is good because we can continue to hear you Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern.
Exactly. We tend to work hardest in January and February. The session is 60 days next year and 45 days the year after. And the rest of the year, people keep their day jobs. And I certainly plan to keep coming here and doing the Inside Scoop and keep talking with you, Leslie, as well on every second hour on Wednesday.
Absolutely. You know, when we do this hour, you know, full disclosure to our listeners, sometimes it'll be something I want to talk about with you. Sometimes it's something we both want to talk about. This is something you really wanted to talk about. And I'm glad because it brings up an area, and she brought up an area in an interview that a lot of people here in LA have been talking about. And I'm sure throughout the country, I see on social media, they are. But you wanted to touch upon and talk about Rachel Dolezal. And one of the things that she said, the former NAACP leader in the Spokane chapter, is that the case of Caitlyn Jenner resonated with her. Now, Mark, I had said before you came on, and we've shared this before, you are a gay man, and you believe, because we don't have 100% medical scientific evidence yet, but that you were born with the orientation that you have, correct?
Definitely, particularly because life would have been a lot easier for me if I'd been straight. And I tried very hard to be. I had girlfriends, like most gay men. You know, I didn't quite realize I was gay until I came of age and recognized that the typical paradigm wasn't working for me. But yes, absolutely.
How old were you when you realized that you were a gay man?
Fully realized, I would say 18, had inklings definitely in my teenage years.
So not as early as 6, 7, 8 years of age.
No, but partly you got to remember it was a different time. I'm older perhaps than I look, but the 80s were a very different time. Today, in a culture when kids realize that gay is an option, that it's who they can be, that's who they are, they're more likely to recognize. At a time when you grow up and you don't realize that being gay is even really possible, you can't connect the dots into the natural feelings that you're feeling. In fact, 20 years before me, some people would come out in their 50s and 60s. I came out in my 20s. And today, yes, kids tend to come out in their teens and sometimes even earlier. But I think that's societal rather than physical.
Oh, okay. Now, obviously, and you are white. You were born white, correct?
I'm white. Some would argue that Jews aren't fully white, but
right. You're either Semitic or Ashkenazi, right?
I'm Ashkenazi, but my mom thinks we're Sephardic because I tend to be darker than most Jews. Actually, I'm darker than some black people. I have relatively dark skin. I like my Mediterranean heritage. I have no problem with it, but. Some people would not characterize me as, quote, white, unquote, but I'm definitely not African-American in any sense.
Right. I am white, and I am half Jewish, and that half is Ashkenazi. And without going into detail, due to extreme DNA extrapolation, I have Ashkenazi. I am of the Ashkenazi race more than I am Caucasian, believe it or not, in my DNA makeup. And that's a whole other you and I have drink story.
Basically European Jewish is Ashkenazi.
Yes,
for
yes.
Who
my
don't
family,
know
my family's from Russia and Poland. My Jewish
right.
family. Okay. So, and you were born male. I was born female. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So when Rachel Dolezal says that Caitlyn Jenner's story resonated with her, we're going to talk after this break what your take is from this. Because even though I'm straight, I'm white, and I'm female, it kind of bothered me that she put herself in that same position as Caitlyn Jenner. We'll be back with Mark Levine, my buddy, my co-host every Wednesday, right here on The Only True Democracy and Talk Radio Don't Go.
Leslie Marshall, the simple truth in a complicated world. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE.
I'm Leslie Marshall, he's Mark Levine, and we want you to know that GEICO has been saving people money for over 75 years. Mark, thanks for holding my buddy on the East, and I'm here in the West. Thanks for holding and welcome back. Do you feel they're comparable? And obviously, you know, some people might say, well, we don't know what she's going through, but do you feel that racial identity can be compared to or, you know, is on the same, you know, level playing field, if you will, as gender identity? Mark? Is Mark with us?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. I do not find them comparable. Indeed, I find the comparison offensive. Look, if you are in the wrong gender identity, if you're born a boy in a girl's body or a girl in a boy's body, the prejudice and difficulty that you face from the time you're a small child is immense. I'm a gay man, and I'll be the first to tell you that while being gay is hard, it is nothing compared to the intense harm that people who are transgender face, societal pressure, everyone, peer pressure from parents, from friends, well-meaning people, as well as downright bigots on down. What Bruce, now Caitlyn Jenner, did, I think, was courageous and extremely difficult thing to take. And conversely, if you're white and you want to pretend to be black, that's exactly the opposite. It's easier to be white than black,
yeah.
Far easier. She went from a privileged status to a less privileged status. It's exactly the opposite of Caitlyn Jenner, and I do think it's offensive of her to make the comparison.
Do you also, just curious, you might know, being a gay man, you may not, more about the LGBT community. I have actually met some people. I met a woman, that James Bond woman, years ago. I had told the story that underwent the full transformation. I saw her body naked. She showed it to me. And God, the surgeon made her better than God made me, let me tell you. She was born with more female chromosomes than I have. So in other words, on paper, genetically, she was more female than me, even though she was a boy. Now, years ago, and you know this, Mark, people who are referred to as hermaphrodites, having both sex organs or whatnot, one sex organ defined, it was determined by the doctors based on, oh, I think that looks more like a clitoris than a penis, what
right.
The child was, or just based on, oh, the mother's like, well, I have three sons, I want a daughter, whatever. And nowadays we have the ability to look at the, they make that the decision when this occurs with the chromosomal, breakdown with DNA extrapolation, looking at the actual chromosomes. And then in addition to that, in addition to surgery, there are hormonal replacements. I was telling about my nanny's little girl who's getting her period, and she's 3 years old, and she has breast because she has an overabundance of female hormones. And and they did say if she had been a boy, she probably would have identified as a girl simply because of those hormones. My question to you is, do you think that everyone who is male and identifies as female, or female identifies as male in the transgender community, has a chemical issue? And I say that because you are born gay.
Mm-hmm.
I am born straight. You know, is a man who identifies as a woman born into the wrong body or into the wrong genitalia?
Well, obviously, some of them are chromosomal, and in fact, we use the term intersex now because hermaphroditic is seen as pejorative by some.
Thank you for that, because I wasn't up on that. No, seriously.
Yeah, intersex is the proper PC term, Leslie, just so you know. But I don't believe that everyone who is transgender, female to male, is born with male chromosomes and vice versa. I think it's an issue more complex than chromosomes. I think there's brain connections. At the end of the day, though, I think there's a certain freedom we should allow human beings. If you are willing to undergo the intense psychological pressure, physical pain and agony, and all the difficulties of changing your gender from one to the other, and people find that you're a same person that just really identifies with the other gender. If you're willing to undergo all of that, then I say, God bless you. Be who you want to be. I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to look at your chromosomes and judge you one way or the other. I just simply believe in freedom and liberty and allowing people.
So having said that, okay. So if somebody, for example, doesn't have any kind of chemical or chromosomal, they just, prefer to be a woman than they're a man, or vice versa, then would that be different than what she, Rachel,
it is different.
Dolezal was in?
Here's the difference. Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner, has never pretended she was not a man. I've never heard Caitlyn Jenner say, I have always been a woman, I was born a woman. Caitlyn Jenner has never been dishonest about that. If Rachel Dolezal had said, I identify with black people, I've got black siblings, I've got a black husband, I love black culture, yes, I'm white, I'm born white, but I respect black culture, I want to fight against inequality among the races, and I love being around black people, and I've adopted this people as my own, no one would complain. And everyone would celebrate her, black and white, including me. The difference is she lied about it. There's a difference between being and adopted into a culture and welcomed into a culture and pretending to be of that culture from the get-go. She's simply a liar in a way that Caitlyn Jenner is not.
Okay, let's take some calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. In Palm Springs on line 5, Andrea joins us. Andrea, good afternoon. Welcome. I understand you have a comment to make regarding Caitlyn Jenner. Thank you for joining us again.
No, I'm just going to throw in a little sidetrack political humor. It was something in today's comic section, La Cucaracha, and one character says to the other, you know what I see when I look at this picture of Caitlyn Jenner? Another Republican who votes against her own interests.
Caitlyn Jenner is a Republican.
Yes.
And we have a right to condemn her for that. But
yeah.
But also, just offhand, I think in America we're in this bubble because so much of this is all driven by the ultra-right-wing Christian phobic obsession with anything with regard to sex, that it so derails rational discussion. And I would imagine in Europe and other countries, these discussions are on a whole other level. And I look forward to the day when we can wake up in a country when, you know, that noise machine has been muted. It's just, it's you know, just the whole thing about... this is one other thing related is if I don't know if you're in California or not, but
I am, and Mark is in Washington, D.C.
Okay. There is an Orange County attorney that filed papers for an amendment, an initiative on the ballot, which it's so-called the Intolerant Jackass Act, because he wants to authorize the killing of gays and lesbians by, quote, bullets.
Yes, yes, that's in California. That is
convenient.
Yes, that is correct.
Right. And so the Secretary of State is trying to find some way to stop that. But a woman, her name is Charlotte Laws, L-A-W-S. She's a Woodland Hills author and activist. She wrote a proposal in response to what it's technically called the Sodomite Suppression Act. She calls her initiative the Make Fun of Matt McLaughlin Act. And her initiative would require anyone who proposes measures calling for the death of gay people to attend monthly sensitivity training and to donate $5,000 to, quote, pro-gay or pro-lesbian organization. And she's been approved. She just wanted to make a statement. She wasn't serious about gathering the 300,000 signatures, but now it's being picked up. And I would suggest if you can get a hold of her to interview her on your program, because it would be hilarious if this got on the ballot here in California.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's a good idea. Andrew, jot that down. We'll try and get her. Sometimes people, when they're in the midst of these things, they don't want to be as open to talk about it. Anything else from you, Andrea?
No, that's it. You guys are great. Love you.
Thank you. So are you. We appreciate it. Thank you. Mark, any remarks to that?
No, just to thank you for your call and hear on your suggestion.
You picked this topic today, and we had talked about her before. What is your opinion of this woman? And obviously, talk radio is great for speculation and for opining and judging, whatever. I want to hear your take on this woman and what you think. Some people say she was identifying with her adopted brothers who were African American, but she asked her brothers to cover for her and not admit who she really was or is. Or was she using it for that opportunity? Because you know there are white people out there that feel, well, if I were a minority, you know what I mean? If I could check that box, I'd, have access through affirmative action to, this, this, and this. I've never heard of this before. I mean, I certainly have seen, like Eminem, people call him the white rapper, but is he identifying as black or is he,
he's
in an urban environment and he's great at rap, which I personally think
exactly.
He is.
He's a white guy who happens to be good at an art form that was founded by black people and still has a vast majority of black people who are the people who do it. And good for him for entering something that is not something that a lot of white people do. I'll tell you why I want to talk about this. It wasn't so much about her. She probably has some issues. The issue that I find most interesting is just generally talking about race as a social construct and as distinct from a physical identity. I mean, again, clearly I'm not defending her, but I do think that ethnicity, that culture, that peoplehood should be shared. And I do like the idea, as a Jewish person, I love it when a non-Jew comes to our synagogue and learns about us. I certainly go into churches and mosques and Buddhist temples, and the folks there tend to appreciate that I, though of another culture, am willing to be open to learning about other religions. As a Southerner, I go all around the country, and I learn about the Midwest. I was just in North Dakota a few weeks ago. I'm not transgender, but I want to understand their experience. And I've spent a lot of time trying to understand and be with African Americans and understand their experience. In fact, I would argue that the African American experience is the most seniorly American experience of them all, because that was one where we had ingrained into our laws discrimination, and indeed I would say the history of the United States of America is largely the history of how we treated or failed to treat black people well. So to me, it's important for us all to understand each other, and what I find so interesting about this case is that it shows how race is both a physical characteristic, but even more importantly, a societal construct. It is an artificial physical characteristic that we determine that a certain color and a certain hair weave is black and a certain one is not. We all know people who we thought were white who say they're black, at least I certainly do, and vice versa, people we thought were black who are white. And it's fascinating to me, just this mix of culture that more interesting than her own personal travails, which I find unique to her.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Sarah next. Sarah joins us from Wisconsin on line 2. Hi, Sarah. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of points, if you could bear with me.
Sure.
I believe gender ID is between your ears and not between your legs. Let me give you a story briefly. As a child, I remember when I was 4 or 5 years old, and the kids wanted to play house at school, and I always wanted to be the daddy. And they wouldn't let me be the daddy, so I refused to play with them because I identified as being a boy. And then when I became flash forward a few years older, 9, 10 years old, the big group of kids asked, well, so what do you want to be when you grow up, Sarah? And I said, a boy, because I thought that was perfectly legitimate. And boy, did I get teased for years for saying that. And I learned to keep my mouth shut. And so basically how I am today is I look female, I am female, I am a lesbian, identify as a lesbian. I have given up the idea of ever being a transgender because that is not possible. And also in society, I am able to address androgynously and not get harassed like a transgender male would get harassed. So that's where I am as far as my thoughts on transgender. And the second point I would like to make is I was just wondering, with all the female hormones pumped into cows, how this could affect the fetus, especially of little boys, and them feeling, you know, that they are indeed a woman.
Now, Mark, you know history pretty well, and correct me if I'm wrong. I was told once by somebody, teacher along the way, that those hormones were pumped in purposely to beef up American soldiers prior to or during World War II, because the German soldiers were physically larger than the American soldiers.
Don't know that any of that is true. I haven't heard that, and I can't speak much about. My understanding is that the hormones and other things pumped into cows are mostly to increase milk production or meat production. But I will say this:
because we are bigger as a result of it. If you generationally, if you look at people that, for example, my husband's father is Indian and very tiny man. Okay.
I don't know that that's skinny, small-boned,
and his sons, like my husband, are like 6'1" and built.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it has to do, frankly, with malnutrition is one of the reasons why Americans, and in fact, in Europe, where they eat better than we do, they're now taller than we are. So I don't know that it's the cow hormones. I do want to say, though, to Sarah, to thank her for sharing her story. It's it just shows you, you know, how very, very difficult it is to be transgender. I do know some female-to-male transgender people who have gone through the transition and done so successfully, but it is extremely hard to do so. There's a lot of societal prejudice against it. And, you know, that's why, again, I think Caitlyn Jenner was extremely brave in her decision.
Thank you for joining us, as always, my buddy, co-hosting the second hour. Congratulations once again on soon to be not just the nominee, but the delegate there in Virginia in that district. And always good to talk to you. Happy hump day. Have a great rest of the afternoon. You can hear Mark Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, right here. Same channel. I'm Leslie Marshall, coming up live from our nation's capital. Talk Radio News Service will be joining us. And keep in mind, wide open telephones coming up in the next hour. What are we talking about? Oh, it's something I think you'll agree to disagree with me on, some of you, and some of you might agree. We'll see. 888-6-LESLIE is our number. Keep that in mind. Don't go away.